Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And we want to let you know that we are sponsored today by Patriot Mobile, the conservative choice for mobile phone service. More on Patriot Mobile a little bit later in our podcast. Jim, let's start with our good martini. And that is news that we thought we were pretty sure was coming Friday night, and it was confirmed by the Trump transition team on Saturday morning. And that is that South Carolina Congressman Mick Mulvaney, Republican who was elected in the Tea Party wave of 2010, is Trump's choice to lead the Office of Management and Budget. And this, Jim, I think is a great choice. Mulvaney is a guy who has been very, very critical of some of the budget deals that have been worked out between Republican Congress and President Obama. He believes you really can whittle this down. Obviously, it'll take some time when you got $20 trillion in debt. But he's a guy who's committed to smaller government and using the tools of government that are available to get it done. So it's not only a good sign that Mick Mulvaney's on the job, but it's a good sign that Donald Trump thinks that Mick Mulvaney's the right guy for this job.
Yeah, if you had to ask one aspect of the Trump presidency that would concern Republicans, it would be whether he really was committed to fiscal conservatism and controlling spending. He'd made plenty of times. He talked about waste, fraud, and abuse. Didn't really like getting that specific into it on the campaign trail. Mulvaney has sterling credentials in this area, plenty of reason to think he's going to be taking this seriously. An interesting question will be if, you know, Trump wants a really big, not, we're totally not calling it stimulus package, but it's basically a stimulus, a giant infrastructure bill, early in his presidency. Will Mulvaney say, hey, no problem, boss, that looks great? Will he be the guy who at least say, well, actually, this is going to run up the annual deficit this much? It'll be, you know, I don't envy Mulvaney having this role. This could be a very challenging role in the Trump administration. It's never fun in any administration. I'd be the guy saying, yeah, we can't afford that, or no, we shouldn't spend that money, or well, actually, we probably should find something to offset, find something to offset this new spending. But I'm glad that he's there. He's not just a figurehead. I think he's going to take this role and this job seriously. And for anyone wondering, his seat is considered pretty deep red, so there's little reason to think the Republicans could lose a seat in a special election with something like that. So very solid pick. We will see. I think he's not going to have an easy 4 years ahead of him, but he's a good man to have in the job.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a very, very difficult job, but he is a guy who has been very clear about what he thinks the government is capable of doing, and now he has a chance to really walk the talk. And so big expectations, and hopefully he'll come through. I see two other issues that rise here, Jim. You mentioned the safe seat. With all these open seats that have to be filled by special elections, the Republicans still have the majority, right? With Pompeo and Mulvaney and Zinke.
I went through the special House elections that will be coming up in the next couple of months. Worth noting, the Democrats, Javier Becerra is becoming California's Attorney General, so he'll be leaving the House, pretty reliably Democratic seat. We shouldn't expect any dramatic changes. But sometimes, you know, weird things can happen in these special elections. People may remember upstate New York having some very contentious ones that were kind of seen as early proving grounds for the 2010 midterm. So always something interesting there, but I don't think you, at this point, looking at the districts that are going to be having open seats, I would not expect much change in the makeup of the House in the coming months.
One other little note, and this is mainly for people who live in the D.C. area, Mick Mulvaney is also the guy who's going to decide, assuming he's confirmed, if the government's open during bad weather. And since he's from the South, I'm guessing it'll take very little to get him to close the government, which is great for commuters, because when the government's closed, it's a breeze, Jim. I can't wait.
Mulvaney, you've already heard your first messages of what the people have spoken of what they want.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and this isn't bad. Jim, happy Electoral College actual voting day. 538 people in 50 states and the District of Columbia going to vote today. Of course, we've got the liberal protests and the celebrities and everybody else saying that Trump electors have some sort of duty to not vote for the candidate that they pledged to support earlier this year. So we assume that by the time all the votes are counted, with the exception of the guy in Texas and maybe some others, Donald Trump will be on his way to officially being elected president of the United States. But the issue of the Electoral College was among several issues that came up Friday at President Obama's year-end press conference. And he was asked, in general, what he thought about the Electoral College. And this response, after 8 years, Jim, probably shouldn't surprise us, but it really is disappointing. Here's what he said.
The Electoral College is a vestige. It's a carryover from an earlier vision of how our federal government was going to work that put a lot of premium on states. And it used to be that the Senate was not elected directly. It was through state legislatures. And it's the same type of thinking that gives Wyoming two senators and with about 500,000 people, and California with 33 million get the same two. So there are some structures in our political system as envisioned by the founders that sometimes are going to disadvantage Democrats.
Jim, I don't want to step on any points you were going to make here, but I'm pretty sure that earlier founding is still binding. That earlier vision on our country. Jim, these dastardly states, I guess they wanted to give states power. You can almost hear the disdain.
I was about to say, you can almost hear that in the voice there. Look, there are certain, somebody pointed out that imagine a scenario in which 80,000 votes flip in Ohio in 2004. And instead of it being a 80,000 vote win for George W. Bush, let's say it's a very narrow Kerry victory in 2004. And yet, because of the votes elsewhere in the country, George W. Bush wins the popular vote but loses the electoral vote. Do you think Democrats would have complained then and said, oh, no, we're not going to take the presidency then? That would be unfair?
No.
It's only because of the way it shook out in 2000 and the way it shook out this year. And it's kind of ridiculous to see this constant demonization of this. This kind of, you know, endless whining that, oh, like, no one had any problem with this. And in fact, the argument was that anybody who doubted the results, or anybody who doubted the freeness, the fairness, the accuracy of the results, was some sort of paranoid tinfoil hat wearing type who was undermining American democracy. And then as soon as they came out with a result the Democrats didn't like, everybody up to it, including Hillary Clinton, filing support for those recounts, has basically done this relentlessly. We shouldn't be surprised by this. There are certain ways that President Obama has been helpful to transition. I think he was saying the right things in the days after the election. But it seems like day by day, he feels more and more comfortable saying that, he's willing to say, yeah, the Electoral College stinks. If you guys don't like it, go ahead and try to change the Constitution. But you know how the Democrats operate. It's too hard, Greg. Repealing the Second Amendment would be hard. So they can't do that either. So we just try to work around the Constitution instead of honoring it the way we're supposed to.
A little bit of credit here with most Democrats, if not absolutely cheerleading a rejection of the electoral vote map or talking about how the Russians are undermining the system. Shout out to David Axelrod yesterday, who tweeted, though I share deep concerns about election and at real Donald Trump, most electors will follow states and should. Reversal would rip country apart. There's not a lot of Democratic voices saying that, at least not that directly. Just one aside here before we go on to the crazy martini, though, Jim. Obama, for all of his faults, is a fairly good troll when it comes to digging other people. And at the end of this answer, this is obviously a direct shot at Hillary Clinton. Listen to this.
But the truth of the matter is that if we have a strong message, if we're speaking to what the American people care about, typically, the popular vote and the electoral college vote will align.
Well, you got a strong candidate, a good message. It shouldn't be a problem.
But we didn't do that this year, so this is where we are.
That was part of his hour-long press conference with the underlying theme, if you had just done everything I did, you would have been just fine.
Yeah, America, I'm deeply disappointed in you. We should point out, by the way, for this, the Democrats certainly have been encouraging this idea of faithless electors. You and I have made fun of Martin Sheen, former President Josiah Bartlett, giving these messages. But it's worth noting that right now, as of this point, there are more Democrats saying they're not going to vote for Hillary Clinton in order to send a message, including one in Maine this morning who announced he's voting for Bernie Sanders. Now, this is why I listen to the 3 Martini Lunch. You get to hear about National Review pieces before they go up. Right now on the editor's desk, I have a piece just ripping this guy to shreds. And quasi-defending Hillary Clinton, meaning that 370-some thousand people voted in Maine expecting, you know, that they were voting for Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders was not on the ballot. Bernie Sanders, you know, he won the primary, but he lost the nomination. And this guy has decided, well, I want to send a message to the Bernie Sanders supporters that not all is lost. So he's voting for Sanders instead. This strikes me as a giant betrayal of this. This is not the way the system is supposed to work. That even if you want to argue, oh, Trump is unqualified or Trump is a menace or all that kind of stuff, you don't just vote for some other candidate because you want, oh, the Sanders activist seems sad. I'm going to vote for him in the Electoral College. That'll make him feel better. That's not your job. So, you know, it's a common internet meme. You had one job, but really, electors, you have one job. To vote for the candidate who won your state. The Constitution isn't really vague about this. So,
Jim, you do the Sanders voice way better than I do. But I just picture Bernie Sanders, hair disheveled, with the crooked finger pointing and going, but Jim, remember the superdelegates.
I actually
got fewer delegates in New Hampshire, even though I won by 20 points. This is making it up. It's even. It's fair.
By the way, exactly what you're being funny, Greg. Which one? As soon as accusations of cheating go around, and as soon as accusations of it isn't fair, then all of a sudden it becomes acceptable to kind of undermine the system yourself. You feel like if the other side's not following your rules, you're not going to follow rules because you're a sucker. And that is going to end up, I suspect, having a lot more damage to our system than any Russian hacking going on.
Well, there's a lot of people behind these protests, and somehow somebody's paying for it. The question is your phone company helping to pay for it? Would you switch phone companies if you knew your current carrier was using your money to fund liberal causes? Maybe it's trying to disrupt the Electoral College. Maybe it's restricting your Second Amendment rights or even promoting abortion through organizations like Planned Parenthood. What if there was a liberal phone company targeting conservative candidates and organizations? Would you want to switch to a conservative phone company to help against their liberal agenda? The fact is, your current phone carrier may be using your money to undermine your conservative beliefs. Well, Patriot Mobile has decided to take action.
Patriot Mobile offers nationwide talk and text and high-speed data at competitive prices and donates up to 5% of your monthly bill to the conservative organization of your choice. You get the same quality service. The latest and greatest devices like the Apple 6 and Galaxy S7, for example, competitive prices and center-right causes that you believe in. Finally, a mobile phone company that believes what you believe.
Patriot Mobile, America's only conservative phone company, was created to fight for conservative causes and defend conservative candidates. Stand with Patriot Mobile and give voice to your conservative values with every call, every text, and every status update. Call 1-800-A-PATRIOT right now or go to patriotmobile.com/ricochet to sign up. Again, patriotmobile.com/ricochet. Patriot Mobile, the conservative choice for mobile phone service. Join the conversation. All right, Jim, we spent some time with Barack Obama in the bad martini. Let's move on to Michelle Obama in the crazy martini now. As many folks, I think, are probably aware at this point, she had a sit-down with Oprah Winfrey, who nodded along and dropped in a few at different points in this interview because of all the profound points that Michelle Obama was making. Here's a very quick cut that is getting the most attention from this interview, and then we'll play the one that should probably bother people a whole lot more. Here's the first one.
We feel the difference now.
Yeah.
See, now we're feeling what not having hope feels like.
Oh, hope's gone. There was no hope till 2008, and now it's gone as he's about to leave office. But here's how Michelle Obama views Barack Obama as president in relation to the American people.
What do you give your kids if you can't give them hope? You know, our children respond to crises the way they see us respond. You know, it's like the toddler that bumps his head on the table. And they look up at you to figure out whether it hurts. And if you're like, oh, my God, they're crying. But if you're like, you know what, babe, it's okay. It's okay. And I feel that way about the nation. I feel that Barack has been that for the nation in ways that people will come to appreciate.
I guess we have to ask for goldfish now, Jim. I don't know. But, I mean, this is the liberal mentality that they know better and that anything good has to come from them.
Yeah, unacknowledged in Michelle Obama's assessment of this past year. So why did the American people choose to go from hope to not hope? Right? I mean, there's no rationality to that.
Right.
So unless she thinks that we all just, you know, bumped our heads like those toddlers and aren't making crazy, you know, made crazy decisions, what you might come to the conclusion, Mrs. Obama, is that the president did not actually deliver hope, and they lost hope, and they concluded that his way was not going to work, and that even though I have plenty of gripes with Donald Trump, they decided he was the one who was more likely to deliver a better future, deliver a better set of policies, and bring about a better, more prosperous country. Now, we can argue about whether that's the case, but two differing choices were put before the American people, and one was considered to be more or less the status quo. You know, Hillary Clinton was considered to be about as close as you could get to a third term for Barack Obama, and they chose otherwise. Now, I am sure that thinking of the American people as angry toddlers probably makes her feel better, but I don't think it's particularly good for Democrats if they ever want to win back a majority. And if they don't, that's fine. I can live happily with Republican-run government for the rest of my life. But for the sake of our public discourse, it probably would be good if most people who represent the Democratic Party would kind of kick the habit of thinking of Americans as toddlers who need some sort of governmental parental figure, or perhaps even a nanny state, Greg, to step in and save us from bumping our heads on the coffee table. And oh, by the way, what's up with that parent letting us crawl around under the coffee table in the first place?
Whose supporters are acting like toddlers right now?
Fair point.
So I guess some people embrace that role. Jim, that's it for today. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And a reminder to check out our friends at Patriot Mobile. Call 1-800-A-PATRIOT or go to patriotmobile.com/ricochet. They donate up to 5% of your monthly bill to the conservative organization of your choice. Join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.